The life of Gustavus Adolphus. Gustavus and Russia. Well, not for one moment did Sigismund of Poland agree to approving the changes of rulers which had taken place in his hereditary domain in Sweden. Fear that his emissaries would strain every nerve to win revenge was no doubt among the reasons which contributed to the decision of the estates at Nykoping not to insist upon a regency, as laid down in the original succession agreement. It soon became very clear that Sigismund had no intentions of deviating from his demand to be considered as a legitimate king of Sweden. To him, Gustavus Adolphus was quite simply Duke Gustavus Adolphus of Sondermanland, and more or less accidental usurper of the throne. The great majority of the Catholic powers of Europe, in particular Habsburgs in Austria and Spain, followed his examples. Far into the next decade, we find Gustav Adolphus alluded to as the Duke of Sondermanland, or as sometimes in the Spanish Netherlands, the Duke of Finland, or Gustavus, or the Swede. There were even a few Protestant princes, for example, the Elector of Brandenburg, who at first took up the same attitude. All who wished to have diplomatic dealings with the King of Poland gave him what he considered to be the full title which Providence had bestowed upon him, for he never opened letters which did not fulfill the requirements in this respect. No one who knew Sigismund well could imagine that the mere question of title was for him the all-important point. It was the characteristic of his unshakably legitimist standpoint that in his assumed role of father of his country, he sought to restrain Christian IV from attacking Sweden and later laid claim to Augsburg when the Danes held it in pledge. He never ceased to consider the Swedes as his subjects, and it was as subjects that he addressed them in those communications which at regular intervals he caused to be smuggled into the country. In the early days of his reign, Gustavus Adolphus made use, though only rarely and incidentally, of another title, otherwise unknown in Swedish history. The troublous times in Russia were nearing their climax. In the universal confusion, Poles and Swedes contended to establish their influence in the degenerating barbarian state. In the early summer of 1611, the Russian National Militia, assembled in Moscow, despairing of the chances of its native rulers, and had chosen Gustav Adolf of Sweden as their Tsar and Grand Duke. Their decision had indeed no effect, by reason of confusion and the conditions attached to it, but immediately afterwards, Jacob de la Garde, as commander of the Swedish auxiliary army, concluded a treaty with the authorities of the captured city of Novgorod. By this treaty, to which it was assumed that the other Russian provinces would agree, it was decided that the lordship of Novgorod should choose the King of Sweden as its protector, and should elect one of his sons as Tsar. This last clause demonstrated the risks of intervention. It had not been foreseen by King Karl IX, whose real object had been to check the progress of the Poles, and when Gustavus Adolphus was recognized as king in the succession to his father, the question was still open for decision. The offer was not declined. Gustav Adolphus seems to have been ready to accept the crown of the Tsars for himself. He transacted state business as Grand Duke of Moscow, and on the same day that he put his signature on the privileges of the nobles, he granted letters of giving a Russian with land and territory of Novgorod. This evidence to show that in the summer of 1612 he was still sticking to his project, possibly for more or less tactical reasons, but in the end he convinced himself that it was impossible, and finally succeeded in overcoming Queen Katrina's objections to the candidature of her younger son. He was indeed the only foreigner, if de la Garde is to be believed, who had any hope of uniting the Russians behind him. Gustavus Adolphus openly acknowledged that he did not like the arrangement, particularly in view of a possible conflict of policy, which might in the future divide him from his brother. But before Carl Philip, after long delays, reached the frontier, events in the East had taken a turn, which destroyed the basis of any dreams of establishing a Swedish junior line on Muscovite soil. Sweden found herself, in consequence, involved in fresh struggles, which were not ended until the peace signed at Stolbava in 1617. In the autumn of the same year, Gustavus Adolphus's long-delayed coronation was finally performed in the Cathedral Church of Uppsala. So we have a little Russian test there. Now next time, we'll be looking at Gustav Adolphus's marriage. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus, Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32, by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry, by Brzezinski, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry, by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.